Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson, and this week's show is brought to you by Haybale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. They catch fish year-round. They're crushing walleyes right now, and they have those heated snow bears in the winter. Find out more at haybaleheights.com. It's also brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. I've got a few friends up at Lake of the Woods right now, and all they've been doing is sending me picture after picture of big walleyes that they've been catching. You can plan your trip at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Also by Mid-Migration Outfitters, offering guided duck and goose hunts around the Lac Qui Parle area in western Minnesota. Mallard numbers are up 38% in Minnesota this year. We had 90,000 of them on the refuge last fall. It was unbelievable. Best fall we've seen for mallard hunting, and looks like it could be even better this year, hopefully. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com. for more information. All right, we're going to talk to Tony Crotty about the latest duck numbers that recently came out from the Minnesota DNR. Here this week on the old radio show, Joe Henry will check in from Lake of the Woods, and Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish. We'll try to get an update from Lucas Mertens from Haybale Heights and get a Devil's Lake report as well. First, though, we're going to start with pheasants and pheasants forever. Jared Wickland is a public relations manager with PF, and he's joining us now here to talk birds. But first, Jared, I want to talk dogs because you got a message that no one ever wants to get while they're at work. Your dog is sick or some sort of variation of that message. How's your dog doing, man?
You know, the dog is doing better. Yeah, you never expect to hear your wife call you at lunchtime and say, I'm trying to get the dog to go outside and go to the bathroom. Its back legs are not working.
Yikes.
Can you come out? So it was kind of a fire drill yesterday afternoon. But fortunately, the dog, I think, just had some type of what the vet described as a GI tract infection or inflammation, I guess. And I thought that was pushing on some muscles and on some nerves. They gave her a muscle relaxer and gave her some anti-inflammatory. And she's an 8-year-old Labrador. And this morning I came downstairs. She was laying on her back in her bed, and she popped right up and wanted to go outside and came back in and was begging for food. So I think we're on the mend, but it was just kind of a freak accident. But yeah, definitely something you don't want to hear of your most trusted bird dog in your lineup at your residence.
Yeah. What's your dog's name?
Coda.
That's a black lab, right?
Black Labrador Retriever. And then I've got Jackson, who's the English Pointer. So
sure. Man, that is, yeah, it's just tough. You know, so the other day I had a little situation with my dog too. And that, anytime that happens, it just, your heart sinks. And glad to hear everything is okay. Jared Wickland is our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Pheasants Forever. And I want to talk about the farm bill, but before we do that, let's talk about conditions right now, because I thought we had a pretty good winter. We had all those storms in the spring. It was tough for snow goose hunters out there. And then we've had a lot of rain, had a lot of rain since then. I did see my first brood about a week ago, but since I haven't seen
awesome
any. Yeah, I haven't seen any since though. What are you seeing out there?
I've talked to a lot of different people throughout the spring here, and especially since summer just started. Talked to a lot of people the last week or two. People are seeing birds. Some are seeing big broods. Some are seeing really, really small broods, as in one or two chicks with a hen. I think it just kind of depends. And people got to keep in mind, too, that, you know, hen pheasants and pheasants in general are really good at disguising themselves, and especially their broods. That's how they get them. You know, everything is lining up at the buffet to try and eat a pheasant chick. So they do a good job of staying concealed. But as you said, you know, we had a pretty decent winter, especially in a lot of different areas. But what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, I hear it all the time. Oh, we had an easy winter, man. We should have an awesome pheasant hatch this year, this spring. That's only part of the puzzle. When we get the types of rainfalls that we've had recently, it really doesn't bode well for pheasants. And granted, it's not everywhere, but when you look at southern Minnesota, especially down into Iowa, I talked to a farmer that I hunted with down in Iowa just the other day, kind of near the Forest City area, northern Iowa, Winnebago County, all the way over to the northwest. And they had, you know, 5 to 6 inch rainfall events, multiple events. Jeez. In a matter of hours. And anytime that happens, especially if chicks have just hatched and they can't thermoregulate their body temperature, a hen pheasant can only keep them alive for so long, or warm for so long, rather. And but you got to give them credit, though. They got a lot of years of evolution under their belt. It's not the first time they've seen a rainstorm. So we're still holding tight. You know, you look at different areas of the country. The Dakotas are looking pretty good right now, or really good, I should say. Talked to a lot of different people out there, biologists, landowners, farmers. And I got a picture from North Dakota the other day up by Bismarck. It was a hen pheasant with 13 chicks following it.
Nice.
On the side of the road. So anytime you start hearing reports like that, it says, well, you know, even other parts of the Midwest, the Great Plains might not be doing so hot, but that doesn't mean there can't be great opportunities elsewhere, which might be the case this year. I guess we're gonna find out.
Jared Wickland, our guest from Pheasants Forever here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking pheasants and birds and conditions right now. And you drive around Western Minnesota, and there's a lot of standing water out in those fields right now. Jared, when are they gonna be able to start developing webbed feet and start swimming?
Yeah, we're developing a prototype life vest right now for pheasants for the spring season. But it really doesn't bode well, because a lot of this rain started off you know, back at kind of our peak hatch, which in Minnesota is right around the 10th of June. And since then, we've had some pretty big rain events. And granted, it's not in all parts of our state. It's been fairly spotty. There's other areas where people have told me, yeah, we're seeing chicks. We've had a great hatch so far, and we've missed some of those big rain events. We haven't had the hail this year like we did last year.
Yeah.
Which is good too, but it's those big rain events, and especially if it's colder temps. Now, granted, it's been a little warmer out this year so far with the rain that we've had. But when you're talking 5 and 6 inch gully washers, that can do a number on chicks, especially, you know, once you get them past that 2 to 3 week period where they can fly, they're usually going to be okay. But it's that critical period at the time of hatch and that first 10 to 14 days. It's critical they stay warm and they stay dry.
Well, and this might be a little bit out of your wheelhouse, but you talk about the hail, and I know last year there was that big hailstorm, or a couple big hailstorms in June, that we figure wiped out a bunch of birds. And, you know, we had those big counts for rough grouse last year, and then the numbers didn't translate into the woods in the fall. And I know you like to grouse hunt too.
Yep.
What do these rain events that we've been having this year, what do you think they're doing to the rough grouse?
Grouse are similar in nature too, as far as the chicks goes and their requirements during that, you know, first 10 to 14 days. I've been keeping a close eye on that. I know, when you look at rough grouse drumming counts, they just came out for, Wisconsin, and they were down about 30%. I haven't seen Minnesota's yet, but I was up at Grandma's Marathon the other weekend when we just had those massive rain events. And you're talking anywhere from 7 to 12 inches up into, you know, just the southern parts of St. Louis County, Carlton County, and then over into northwest Wisconsin, which is a great, great grouse hunting zone. That doesn't bode well either. Granted, I mean, it missed some portions of it, but I talked to our editor of our journal, who's got land up in Carlton County, the other day. And he and a friend were up there and saw three different grouse broods on the road.
Oh,
so
good.
That's good news to anybody's ears, especially a avid grouse hunter like ourselves. So.
Right. Jared Wickland, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking a little bit about rough grouse there, and of course, pheasants. And one thing we talk about all the time is you hear about it when there's a rough winter. How do you protect pheasants in rough winters? Well, you have suitable habitat for it. And then we always lament about the loss of habitat that's out there. And I want to talk about the future in the farm bill here. But before we get into that, how many acres of CRP have we lost this year? Do you know that offhand by any chance?
In Minnesota alone, we're set to lose about 200,000 acres when it expires here at the end of September.
Jeez.
They did have some cap space open up. We've got a 24 million acre cap nationwide. And after some contracts expired this last beginning of October, end of September, we were sitting at about 22.7 million acres. just a few weeks ago, and they opened up a few continuous programs for people to sign up. So if you're looking to get into CRP, I would suggest visiting with your Farm Service Agency office, your USDA service center in your county, and they can help you through those programs. But there are some good things ahead, especially as it relates to the Farm Bill.
All right.
We're working.
Well, before, let's get into that here in a second, if I can cut you off for 1 second, because yeah, I want to bring up one other thing, too. Last time we had you on the show, you shared, to me, it was kind of an amazing statistic, one that I hadn't heard before, but just the amount of acreage our ditches in Minnesota add up to and how they can actually be used as quality habitat for nesting birds like pheasants, as long as they don't get mowed. Anyway, tell us about ditches in Minnesota.
Ditches are incredibly important. We just did a series on pollinators and the roadside equation as well. But whether you're talking pheasants, ducks, other small game, roadsides are incredibly important. In the state of Minnesota alone, they estimate up to about 500,000 acres of nesting habitat is available in roadside ditches. The problem where it comes in is the rules and regulations related to roadside mowing. Pheasants Forever is involved in that conversation. It's going on right now, and I expect it to come up in next year's legislative session. Roadsides remain a very important concept for pheasants, especially in a lot of those western Minnesota counties. In some of those, you get up to a third of all your nesting, or even half of your nesting habitat is only available in ditches, since it's really fertile ground, and it's really good for growing crops and livestock. So roadsides become a more and more important equation, especially as some of our CRP ground disappears.
Okay, the Farm Bill. At one point, you were optimistic that we could get the number of CRP acreage offered back up close to that 2007 mark of 38 million or whatever it was. But the last I heard is that we'd be lucky to get close to 30 million. I want to talk about where we sit, what happened, what might happen when we come back with Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever here on Sporting Journal Radio. Also, Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department will join us. We'll get some fishing reports, too, and more, all coming up on Sporting Journal Radio.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman, and if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
The fancy iPhone, you can download the podcasts app and subscribe to get the Sporting Journal Radio podcast delivered right to your phone, which then I hook up to my car stereo via Bluetooth. So when I'm on these long road trips, I can listen to the radio show via the podcast app on your Apple iPhone right there. All right, Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever is our guest. And Jared, I'm glad to hear your dog is doing better. They may be our hunting
Thank
partner.
You.
Yeah, but they're part of the family. I was telling you the other day, my dog got stabbed in the back of her mouth with a stick that I was throwing the other day.
Oh, she was carrying it lengthwise, and it Well, probably hit her when they hit the ground, huh?
So what happened was, and it's funny, when I said the word stick, her ears perked up and she just looked at me like, because, you know, and I've got Josh Miller from Sport Dog. I've been talking to him about some summer dog training tips, and we're going to hear from him the next couple of weeks here on the radio show. So I'm like, man, I got to get out there and work with my dog a little bit. And I've lost all my bumpers. I've either driven over the bumpers or lost them.
So, I got to send you a new one.
Well, I would be happy. I'd be happy to get it because I'm out of them right now. So I'm throwing this stick and she made the most blood curdling garbled yelp I've ever heard her make.
Ooh.
and I almost lost
hard to take.
Oh my gosh, I almost lost it, you know. So I'd thrown this stick and she's like Usain Bolt, right? She's quick like ninja. And this, so she takes off run. I wasn't making her hold or stay steady or anything. I was just playing in the yard and I threw this stick. It got hung up in the wind. And as it came down, she was ready to catch it. And it hit one end, hit, she caught one end of it, caught it by the end, and the other end hit the ground and stuck.
Yep.
And it jabbed that stick into the back of her mouth, and it stopped her in her tracks. She was bleeding and gagging and whimpering, and man, it was just brutal. I you know, so right away I look in her mouth, and you know, it's kind of bloody and dirty and whatever. So I cleaned her up and just kind of watched her, and when she wouldn't eat her food, because my dog will eat. Right?
Yep.
Labs,
yep.
They'll
same
eat
with mine.
And eat and eat. When she wouldn't eat, I got a little nervous. I talked to my vet and I watched her overnight, and thankfully she had just like a little bloody drool, and I was like, oh my gosh.
And we all know it costs a pretty penny to go to the vet and talk to the vet, but I highly recommend, like with my dog yesterday and her back legs all of a sudden you know, stopped working. They're like your kid, right? If that happened to your kid, you're automatically going to the hospital,
right?
So take your dog in, have the vet check them over. That's what they're there for. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you, and thankfully I'm friends with my vet, and I can,
yeah, or call him.
I can send her messages, and I send her a video of the inside of her mouth. And the one thing I have learned with dogs is when it's like a mouth cut, it might bleed a lot, but a lot of times they're quick healers when it comes to things like that. So I kind of watched her overnight and I fed her some soft food, and by the next day she was fine. The vet did recommend some antibiotics, but thankfully,
especially the tongue during hunting season.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get into that every year. They rip that open and it's like a horror movie. I don't know how
prepared
it is. Yeah. it bleeds fast and hard, but
they
cut it off after a while, which is good.
Yeah, I was pheasant hunting. Short story. I was pheasant hunting in Western North Dakota with her one time in a sorghum field, and she cut the bottom of her tongue on a blade of sorghum, and it was absolutely like a horror movie. It was squirting. There was like blood squirting. I had a quarantiner in this bathroom, and of course it was a Sunday, and I was hours away from the nearest vet, you know. So I called the vet, and they're like, well, you know, if you can come in now, or you can see how she does by tomorrow and bring her in tomorrow if she's still having problems. And so I quarantined her in this bathroom, and literally it looked like a crime scene when I went in there the next day. And she's just laying, in the middle of it, just tail wagging, you know, looking up at me. She was fine, but it was, man, it was messy for sure. So
I'm glad she's all right.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyway. All right. Jared Wicklund, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about dogs and puppies. And by the way, I did see that 2-minute trainer video from Pheasants
Josh
Forever
Miller.
With Josh, and he's with Sport Dog and Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com. He'll be on the radio show the next couple of weeks here, giving us some training tips here on Sporting Journal Radio. And if you want a good dog in the fall, it requires work all throughout the off season, and it's especially easy to get lazy as their dogs get older too, and they know the gig. It's easy to get lazy about training them, but it's pretty important. And Jared, you probably know that. And Jared, let's talk about our falls a little bit. How it could get better or worse besides dog injuries. But let's talk habitat. We're at 24 million acres of CRP right now. At one point, we were hoping it might get back up close to that 40 million mark, as there is some demand out there from farmers and landowners. But doesn't really look like that's going to happen now, does it?
No, and people, you got to keep into perspective too. When you look at a timeline of, let's take Minnesota for instance, it was a short 10 to 11 years ago, 2007, 2008, we had our best pheasant harvest in recent memory, at right around 700,000 to 750,000 roosters. So it doesn't take that long to make birds, but you got to have the habitat. And when we talk farm bill, the farm bill as a whole encompasses a lot of different things, food stamps, nutrition programs, those types of things. But we focus specifically on the Conservation Reserve program here at Pheasants Forever. And the other suite of programs that goes with that. It's called Title II as part of the farm bill. But CRP by far is the most successful private lands conservation program the nation has ever seen. And we focused exclusively on that. Back in that 2007, 2008, we had close to 37 million acres enrolled in CRP. Now we're down to 24 million, and we're feeling the effects of that. If you look at harvest rates, harvest statistics throughout the nation, there's a best fit line that runs in every state pretty closely with the amount of CRP acres, especially in the pheasant range. So I'll give a quick synopsis of where we're at right now. We're sitting at 24 million acres in the current farm bill. The 2018 farm bill is being discussed right now. And here's where we sit. The House bill is at 29 million acres, which would be great for sportsmen and women and upland hunters. The Senate bill is at 25 million acres. But the Senate bill also includes a conservation reserve easement program, which would accept up to 3 million acres, and those would be permanent acres outside of the CRP cap. So even if it comes in at 25 million, we're actually a little bit closer to 28 million because of that new program.
Is that considered CREP, or is that something different?
Nope, it's a brand new program they've been creating.
Interesting.
Yeah, because that's a conservation reserve enhancement program. This would be a conservation reserve easement program.
Okay, so same letters, just
yeah.
Couldn't come up with a different acronym for it. Come on, guys.
No, but it's a little bit different. But it would, I think it would go a long ways with landowners and producers who are looking to enroll in a permanent easement program. But right now, by the end of this week, we're expecting the Senate is likely going to vote on their end of the farm bill, and then after that, it goes to conference committee to rectify the House and Senate bills together.
Talking with Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever, Sporting Journal Radio. I got to take another quick break, but Jared, if you can stick around and we can do just a few more minutes, because I want to talk about you went on a bear hunting trip.
Which, yes, sir. Which first time.
Yeah, I want to talk about how that went. We'll do that coming up on Sporting Journal Radio.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
This is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network online, sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and downloading the podcasts app in the App Store on your iPhone. I'm Brett Amundson. This is a Midwest radio home for the outdoors. And we're talking with Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever, obviously about pheasants and about that farm bill. and everything that goes along with it. Jared, where are we at?
Right now, by the end of this week, we're expecting the Senate is likely going to vote on their end of the farm bill. And then after that, it goes to conference committee to rectify the House and Senate bills together. They get try to decide what's in and what's out. Senator Thune from South Dakota is proposing 26.5 million CRP acres to help get the cap up a little farther and make the program easier for people to get in and out of, maybe some shorter term contracts. So there are some good things here. Some of the other programs, voluntary public access has funding this year, but without CRP acres, we got to have CRP acres to open up public access, which in terms of like in Minnesota, for instance, that would be walking hunting access, right?
Sure.
In the western and southwestern parts of the state. So there's a lot of good things. There's also some negatives as well, but we're working through those, and we've got three dedicated staff members, Bethany Erb, Jim Inglis, and Dave Nomson, working in D.C. On behalf of Pheasants Forever members, sportsmen and women, to make sure that we have a strong conservation title and plenty of birds flying in the air come fall.
Now, what are you hearing? Jared Wicklund, Pheasants Forever, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. What are you hearing from farmers about this? Because, there's always that fine line of having, telling farmers about habitat and what they can do, and farmers mm-hmm. then asking for programs. It seems like right now a lot of farmers and landowners are in favor of some of these programs. Obviously, it fluctuates, I'm sure, as commodity prices go up and down. But what are you hearing from farmers and landowners about this right now?
Right now, as it has been for about the past year and a half, maybe 2 years, is that there is a lot of people banging down the doors of USDA service centers wanting to enroll in conservation programs. CRP serves a couple different purposes. It's wildlife. It's based on soil health and creating good water quality. But with that, I always like to put in there that it is an avenue for sustaining rural communities and helping people finance, bring some dollars into their farming operation in the more leaner times of agriculture, which is kind of what we're going through right now. So it's a great program for supporting farmers and landowners. There's a very high demand for it right now, as there has been for about the last 2 years. I don't see that changing. They're looking at reducing some CRP payments for folks in accordance with what crop prices have done as well. But I think there's still going to be plenty of people pushing out there. And what we're focusing on right now is precision agriculure. We don't need the days of whole field CRP are probably over, where people are rolling hundreds of acres at a time. That's just not realistic anymore. But we work with farmers and landowners every day to put CRP on marginal acres, and thus helping create more return on the acres that are more profitable. And if we can do that and kind of create an agriculture or conservation mosaic in the pheasant and quail range, pheasant and quail are going to be just fine. And that starts by being a Pheasants Forever member and helping us advocate for the farm bill and more important conservation programs as part of Title II.
What we haven't done yet is talked about your bear hunting trip that you took to Montana this spring. How long ago was that now? A few weeks ago?
Yeah, we left on May 18th and we got back on the 26th.
Okay. So about a month ago or so. How did it go?
It was good. We had six of us that went, and it was a learning process. Montana is a state, they don't do baiting out there. And that's one of the things that really drew us out there, is that it's a true spot and stock mountain bear hunt. We were hunting there in Lewistown, Montana. And for anybody that enjoys big game at a different time of season, the spring bear hunt is really incredible. It's nice weather. There's not that many bugs out there. And it's just a different way of doing things, going out and scouting avalanche chutes where the grass is greening up, scouting a bear from, probably over a mile away, and then working as hard as you can to close the distance. And I ended up taking a two-year-old younger bear with a cinnamon color face to it. I was really happy about it. It was just an overall great experience. When you're you're stocking bears amongst all sorts of elk and mule deer. There's a lot of pronghorn antelope out there. I highly recommend it. And you know what? The fact that the six of us that went, we spent about $2,600 just in license fees. And that's, you know, that's perpetual supporting conservation into the future. And I was happy to do it. It was an incredible trip and something I would recommend for anybody.
So you got to spot and stalk a bear and shot a cinnamon.
Yeah. Yep. It was, you know, we were just kind of kidding around on the way out there. I said, man, we thought, wow, if we go 50% or maybe a little bit better than that, we'll be doing great. And, you know, you get out there and kind of your expectations are tempered a little bit when you talk to locals and they say, hey, if one of you guys gets one during this trip, you know, that's pretty good. If two of you score, that's like unheard of out here. So we saw eight bears during the trip. I harvested the one. It was more, you know, going with a group of like-minded individuals who care about conservation and, care about just having a good time. And we had one guy on the crew who was basically brand new to hunting. So kind of introducing a new person to the outdoors that recruit, retain, reactivate.
Cool.
R3 promotion, I think was pretty cool. So if anybody's looking for an awesome hunt, to kind of change things up, if you're tired of going out in the morning and sitting against a tree waiting for a tom turkey to come in your decoy, go check out bear hunting. It's a fun adventure in a kind of rugged wilderness areas, and highly recommend it.
Yeah, so tell me about it. So you spot this bear from about a mile away?
Yep. So the place we were hunting was called, we were staying at this place called Timber Creek. It's in the Little Snowy Mountains of central Montana. And a lot of these are big bowls where, you know, ancient volcanoes used to be. And there's one entrance to these, with big shale walls running up and down. So you're basically going through a river a couple times to get into these big old basins. And, just like you'd hunt for elk or anything else in the mountains during the day, you know, it's warming up and your scent is going up. In the afternoon, as the sun starts to get behind some of the mountains, it starts coming down. And so you sit at the bottom of these mountains and you're basically looking up into these big basins, up into the avalanche chutes where the greenest grass is. These bears like rugged, high terrain. And you basically try to spot them from the bottom. And once your wind shifts and start pulling out of the canyon, you pack up and you make your way up to where you last saw that bear as fast as you can. And if you're not using the wind, you're already out of luck as it is, because they have one of the best noses in the animal kingdom. So that was basically it. You know, working evenings are a big time for bears. That's when they're out. And just sitting and enjoying nature, spotting stock, starting at the bottom of the mountain and working up. And out there, I think shooting time went to about 9:15. So by the time you pack down or pack your bear out and get back to camp, you know, it's probably 11:30 at night. And we just sleep in the mornings and do that a couple days in a row.
So you spotted this bear and got up on top of it?
Yeah, this one was actually, we were working our way out on a trail to the area that we wanted to hunt in the afternoon. And this was actually about, I think it was 5:30-ish when I ended up shooting it. But we were just walking along and this thing came walking out of the woods, eating on some really lush green grass on a hillside. And we watched it for a little bit. You got to watch real careful, because if it's a sow, it could have cubs with it. And you need to be aware of that, because it's a $2,500 fine if you shoot a sow with cubs.
Oh, sure.
You can shoot a sow or a boar, either one. Just make sure it doesn't have cubs with it. And we watched this one for a while and ended up taking a 208-yard shot at it after a little while. And I ended up dropping it right where it was feeding. So,
well, congratulations.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Shooting a cinnamon like that, it's very cool. Jared Wicklund, Pheasants Forever, our guest here on Sporting Journal Radio. I appreciate the time today. I appreciate all the info on the farm bill and everything else, too.
And, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we get some drier conditions for these birds. And let's be honest, hopefully the farmers could use some drier conditions out there, too.
And, oh, yeah.
But as a waterfowl hunter, after what we saw last fall with the wetter conditions, there's a little part of me that is a little excited about fall waterfall hunting again this year.
I bet.
But we'll see. You can only play the hand that Mother Nature deals you. So we'll see what happens. But Jared Wicklund, thanks again for being on Sporting Journal Radio.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, it's Brett Amundson from Sporting Journal Radio and Prairie Sportsman. And if you want to hunt with us this fall, you can. We'll be guiding duck and goose hunts all over western Minnesota around the Lac qui Parle area. Lac qui Parle is known for its goose hunting, and this year should be no different. And with the wet conditions we've had, the ducks are everywhere. If you want to find out more information, go to midmigrationoutfitters.com. We've got pictures, videos, more information about what you need to bring and what the rates are. Visit midmigrationoutfitters.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
Welcome back to Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. DNR put out its waterfowl survey results from May. They say the mallard's breeding population is up 38%. Also, blue-wing teal population is up 20% from last year. There's a few that are down. Ringnecks, woodies, gadwalls, shovelers, cans, and redheads are 21% lower than last year. But overall, our duck numbers in Minnesota, close to 700,000 is the estimated total breeding duck population, 9% higher than last year. Canada goose population is also up from last year as well. So good news for duck hunters across the state of Minnesota. We were going to try to talk to Tony Crotty from Mid Migration Outfitters about waterfowl numbers, but we're running out of time here, so we'll get Tony on here in a couple of weeks. Also, Lucas Mertens, we didn't get a chance to connect with him too, running out of time, so thanks. Sorry, Lucas. We'll check in with you in the coming weeks as well. From Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort in Devil's Lake. Now, though, we're going to check in with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods, and man, I've just been getting nothing but images and pictures and texts and messages from friends of mine that are up on Lake of the Woods right now, just crushing walleyes up there, Joe.
If nothing else, it legitimizes the reports I put out, because I get questioned, are the fish really always biting on Lake of the Woods? And you know, we got a lot of resorts out fishing, and you know what? If somebody doesn't find the fish today and only catches a few fish, the people that are fishing downwind probably whacked them. I mean, there are so many walleyes in Lake of the Woods that normally there's something good happening.
Sure. And of course, there's never any guarantees, of course, in this industry, hunting, fishing, whatever. But you put the right time in, and using the right gear, or maybe using the right guides, or on the right part of the lake, and you're going to find fish pretty much, especially a place like Lake of the Woods. There's so much water and so many fish up there. And you're right, there's guys out fishing everywhere all the time. Someone's probably catching fish all the time up there on that lake, Joe.
Absolutely. And, you know, it sure helps too. I mean, you know, you talk about going to a body of water to increase your odds. You know, it's estimated, and you know, I don't know if this is, you know, biological estimates or what, but there's estimated that in Lake of the Woods, there's probably 10 million walleyes. Well, you take those sheer numbers of fish, add on saugers, and then you also take a look, and like I tell my buddies, hey, you know, the secret to catch a trophy walleye is to fish in a body of water that has a lot of trophy walleyes. And you know that the trophy walleye scenario up at Lake of the Woods, we are so lucky, because a lot of that has to do with gene pool. A lot of it has to do with big water that will produce big fish. And the other part of that is what they eat. There's such a variety of forage they can eat that it keeps them healthy. And then when they get to be about 25 inches or so, that's when they shift their diets over to eating those tulipes. We got a huge population of tulipes, and that really helps those walleyes grow big.
And that's interesting. And I mean, you nail it. It's so simple. You want to catch a big fish, go where the big fish are. But forage has become such a topic on the minds of many people in the region, whether it's Lake of the Woods or other bodies of water that are famous walleye lakes. Forage is such a key to healthy populations of walleye and big populations of walleye, big fish too. And man, Lake of the Woods is such a huge, huge body of water. I can't even imagine just how many, with all the different species, I just can't imagine how many fish are actually in that lake.
Oh man, the biomass of fish and living creatures and stuff is just huge. And you know, you talk about forage, you know, we're, again, our natural resource, we are very fortunate because we have such a wide variety of forage that if one portion of the forage is down, let's say emerald shiners are down, which they're not, but let's say they are. Well, gosh, we got perch minnows, we got perch, we got crayfish, we got abundance of different things that hatch out of the mud as larvae and come up as flies or mayflies or fish flies. Or, I mean, there's so much happening at any one given time that it keeps the fishery healthy. You know, a lot of times I hear biologists talk about if there's ever a problem with the lake, it's not a fish problem, it's a forage problem.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio from Lake. He's from with Lake of the Woods Tourism. We're talking about Lake of the Woods right now, and people are catching fish up there. Let's talk techniques a little bit, because obviously, some of these techniques will work on Lake of the Woods as well as other bodies of water too. So people fishing this time of year can employ these pretty much everywhere. But up there, what are people doing to catch fish?
You know, they're catching fish all different ways. It's summer, and those fish are hungry. They're active. Their metabolism's up. Traditionally, jigging is a great method to use. But I'll tell you, when we get the warmer water temps and we get the mayfly hatch, which we've had here the last couple of weeks, that's when it's really a good time to start switching over to spinners. And whether you're using a spinner and a crawler or a single hook spinner and a leech or perhaps an emerald shiner, you know, those spinners are very, very effective. Now, number one, you're presenting live bait in the fish zone. You're moving along at about a mile to 1.25 miles per hour. You have that flash of the spinner. You have the vibration of a spinner, which plays havoc with the walleye's lateral line. You're covering water. So if those fish are spread out a little bit, you're getting through a lot of fish. You're putting your lures, because you're spreading and moving a little bit and getting through more fish, you're putting your lure in front of the mouths of active walleyes. And you know, all those things, plus you can use a crawler harness and a bottom bouncer. Heck, you can use that in rock and mud and in sparse weeds. It's very, very versatile.
And people start to think as the water temperature warms up, the air temperature warms up, walleyes go deeper, they're harder to catch, things slow down a little bit. But Joe, you probably could attest to this as well as I can. I've had some of my best days on Lake of the Woods during the so-called dog days of summer up there.
Yeah, you know, and dog days traditionally are August, right? But you know, we don't have a bad fishing month. And yeah, you know, I represent tourism up at Lake of the Woods, but we really don't. And that's one of the beauties of Lake of the Woods. That's why it's so popular, is that every single month there's good walleye fish on Lake of the Woods. There are lakes that are tough to fish. I mean, you get the weeds blown up, and in some lakes you get the perch that are now good eater size for the walleyes. You're competing with millions of perch. You know, it's just so hard to catch walleyes. Those fish are going deep. It's clear water lakes. You got to fish at night. You know, Lake of the Woods, we've got the stained water. Our deepest spot in the southern end of the lake in the basin is about 34 feet of water. That's very prolific for walleyes. That's why when you get into the summer months, July right now, those fish are all over the place. You can find them in structure. You can find them shallow on different, blooms of bugs or hatches of minnows and stuff. You can also find them out in the basin. There's fish hanging out in that 32 to 34 feet of water. I know some people that are pulling lead corn crankbaits right now and catching fish. Now, as we get into August, it's going to transition where a lot of the walleyes in the lake are going to be sitting out in that 34-foot basin. And I'll tell you, when you get on some of those schools of fish, you can drive for miles, and your screen, your sonar literally looks like simulation mode. I mean, it's hook, 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 beta cloud, beta cloud, clouds of beta, I should say, stuff hatching out of the bottom, hook, 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 hook. I mean, it's just crazy. And that's why some people that like trolling and catching fish that way, target their vacation for August in Lake of the Woods, because I mean, there are so many fish out there and a lot of big fish.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had some great days in August out there. Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. And, Joe, you know, we've been focusing so much on walleye, and rightfully so. People love catching walleyes. But one of the neat fish and one of the neat experiences you can have up there, whether it's Lake of the Woods or the Rainy River, is catching sturgeon. And I want to, next week here on the show, I want to talk about sturgeon because a new season is opening up here, July 1st, I believe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yep.
Okay.
Yep, it's been closed. It's been closed now for, you know, about a month and a half or so. And it's the summer sturgeon keep season opens up July 1st, and that's opened up all summer long into the fall. So it's game on for sturgeon anglers. And I'll tell you what, Brett, you get on that Rainy River, you're going to have it to yourself.
Well, and I bet, because everybody's going to be chasing walleyes, and you can catch, man, and this spring, all I heard about were huge, huge sturgeon. I mean, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, but this could be the good old days for sturgeon fishing, right? I mean, this could, some of the biggest fish I've been hearing about have been coming out this year.
Yeah, you know what? The numbers of sturgeon are growing and the fish are getting bigger and most people are releasing them. So the population's only getting better.
All right. Well, next week we'll talk more about sturgeon and how you could go up and catch them and what you need to do that with Joe Henry coming up next week. But Joe, if people want to book a trip for sturgeon, for walleye, whatever, this summer, this winter, what do they need to do?
Yeah, for sure. You know, all of our resorts are listed on our website, and that's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
The 71st Annual Spring Breeding Duck Survey in North Dakota showed an index of 2.8 million birds this year, down 5% from last year. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. Migratory Game Bird Supervisor Mike Szymanski said even though the Spring Duck Breeding Index is below 3 million for the second consecutive year, it still stands 16% above the long-term average and is the 25th highest on record. Survey results indicate only shovelers and widget increased from their 2017 estimates. Mallards were stable, while green-winged teal were down the most at 20%. All other ducks were from 3 to 17% below last year's numbers. An interesting observation during the survey, Szymanski noted, was the lack of breeding effort for resident Canada geese, and he attributed that to the late spring and overall dry conditions. The number of temporary and seasonal wetlands was down from last year, as figures show the spring water index is down 34%. That was mostly observed in the shallow waters. Similar to last year, there were a lot of wetlands that weren't in good shape and were close to drying up. However, Szymanski said rainfall in the weeks following the survey has improved wetland conditions in many areas. If rain continues over the next month, wetland conditions in some regions will be conducive to raising broods. The July Brood Survey provides a better idea of duck production and an insight into expectations for this fall. The Breeding Duck Survey takes place in May every year. The Game and Fish Department has been doing it for 71 years now, and it is actually the longest known running breeding waterfowl survey in the United States. It consists of 8 transects that run north and south across the entire state, from the South Dakota border to the Canadian border. That is this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.